This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Fox Nomad Podcast. I'm your host, Fox Nomad Anil Polat. This is the first episode of Season 7. Can you believe it? I certainly cannot. We started the podcast in 2019, and here we are at the beginning of Season 7 in 2025. The season will go on through 2026. We usually end the season around late May, early June, a couple of special episodes here and there in the summer, and then I take some time off in August. And I'm back now, and I'm really, really excited for the podcast, for the episodes coming up. Thank you, all of you who've supported the podcast from the early days, or maybe you're a newer listener. Our numbers go up every episode, every season, and that's all thanks to you. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. I've got a lot coming up, a lot going on, so let's catch up with the latest travel and tech news. A few things. This is September, which is one of the 2 months of the year, which is very, very busy in terms of legislation in general, but specifically with drone legislation. So if you have a drone, if you are a recreational flyer, or if you work on a production crew, so if you work as a cameraman, if you work as a drone pilot and you're filming, you know, movies, documentaries, things like that, we have DroneMate Premium, where we give you 24/7 support. And we've helped people all over the world get their permits for drones. We've helped people and production crews, find out where and where they can't fly, get, you know, permission from the government. For recreational flyers, if you just travel with a drone, we will let you know where you can and you can't fly and the countries where you cannot even bring a drone in. There are a lot of them, more than you might expect, where just bringing a drone in means it's going to get confiscated at the airport and your chance of getting it back is going to vary depending on where you are in the world. It's going to be more of a hassle. So if you fly with a drone, if you travel with a drone recreationally, make sure you pick up DroneMate. You can try the premium for 1 month for free and see if it's for you. Like I said, you get 24/7 support. And September is when a lot of the laws change around the world. And we have seen that again. And the app has been updated. It's updated in real time. South Asia, East Asia, and Africa have gotten more difficult. So legislation is kind of working against drone pilots. But in Northern Europe and South and Central America, things have gotten a little bit better. So there's some good news and some bad news. So make sure that you check out DroneMate. It's available for Android and iOS. We've just released the latest updates for the newest versions of Android, the newest phones, and also the same thing for iOS. And as you know, as a developer, we get to see things a little bit ahead of time as to what's coming to the latest versions of the new phones. So make sure that you wait around for that episode and let you know we're going to talk all about new phones coming up. But first, I want to catch you up on some of the travels, some of the things that I did in August. If you're subscribed to the Fox Nomad YouTube channel, you know that I was in STLV. That's STLV Trek to Vegas. It is the Star Trek Las Vegas convention. It is the biggest Star Trek convention in the world on most years. Some years, I think in the past, it has not been, but it is pretty big. And it is something that's on my calendar pretty much every year. So it's just basically like, for me, it's probably about 10 days. You know, the convention itself is 5, but I stay a little bit longer and I do some side trips. And the last time I took some these specific side trips around Las Vegas, it was with Ford. It was with a partnership with Ford. And I got to go to some of these places. And now, 10 years later, might even actually be 11 years. Yeah, 2014 is when I took that road trip. And if you've been following me since then, you've read the stories, you've seen the pictures. But it's been 11 years since I've been to some of these places. So I wanted to share how they've changed. And I wanted to share, if you're going to Las Vegas, some of the things that you can do that are around the city. Now, if you're going to the Star Trek Las Vegas convention, or if you're a Star Trek fan and you're considering it at all, make sure you check out my video. It's up on YouTube now on the Fox Nomad YouTube channel. It's basically a complete guide to the convention. It's how to plan, when to buy tickets for the convention, when to buy travel tickets, where to stay, how to save money on food, what the convention is like, if you're cosplaying, what to do, how the panels work, whether you should get autographs or photo ops, how those work, everything. It's all up there. So make sure that you check that out. And you're going to want to sort of keep an eye on things. And if you're planning on going next year, I would recommend that you check out the video soon, because there are sales on the tickets coming up that happen throughout the year. So if you want to make sure that you catch those, make sure you check out the video, because I tell you when the best times to buy tickets and plan are. So some of the side trips. Now, in 2014, I drove from Las Vegas to Chicago with a brand new vehicle that Ford was debuting. And it was a lot of fun. It's still one of the most fun trips I've ever taken. I went to some of the nerdiest places along the way. And some of those, a lot of those actually were around Las Vegas. So one of the first places I went, and that I would recommend to you to go, is Rachel, Nevada. And if you're like, what is Rachel, Nevada? It is a town with a population of officially 96, I believe. And it's around about 2 hours away from Las Vegas, 90 minutes to 2 hours. It's one of the most beautiful drives you'll make. You are in basically the middle of nowhere. Like, you can drive and drive on these long highway roads and not see anything. That in itself is beautiful. There is, about an hour in, a rest stop and a wildlife preserve where you can see hawks and eagles and different kinds of wildlife. There's also a restroom there, so you can stop, take a break if you want, maybe get some water and keep an eye on the sky for different kinds of birds of prey, which I did get to see this time. And then you keep driving to Rachel. These are straight roads, basically two turns, and then you just go for a couple hundred miles, couple hundred kilometers. One thing that has changed is that there are now gas stations. There's one gas station along the way. Before, you had to basically fill up, you know, around the outskirts of Las Vegas, and then you didn't have a gas station. There would be these signs that said, no gas, make sure that your tank is full, that can get you at least this distance. That has changed. Now there is one gas station that is along the way, so it makes it a little bit easier to plan. But if you leave with a full tank of gas, you shouldn't have any worries to get to and from Rachel. So along the way, you're driving, you see this gas station, you keep going, and there's a little bit of nothing. And then there is this huge, what looks like a sort of an airplane hangar with a giant, I don't know how big this thing is, but it is massive, iron gray alien, you know, like the typical gray alien. And the last time I was there in 2014, it wasn't open, so I had no idea what was in there. So I drove up to it this time, and it was open. It is a gift shop with all kinds of random stuff. So it's got like some typical stuff, some Area 51 shirts and things like that, and some random Star Trek memorabilia, like hidden in the bathroom and in the closets and stuff. And one employee who's working there, they don't have any air conditioning in there. So it's just all fans, and it's pretty warm, and they don't open a lot of days because it gets too hot inside. I mean, it's a hangar, basically, with the most bored-looking employee ever. I think she works like a couple hours a day, a couple of days a week, and there are not a lot of people driving out to Area 51. You know, it's not a place that gets a lot of tourists. So, and when I say Area 51, I'm kind of blending that with this Rachel, Nevada, which I'll get into. But it's just super fun. I mean, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's like out of a movie with the sleepy, you know, person working behind the counter who's not paying attention. It's pretty silent.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
You can walk around and take a look at everything, and it's really fun. You can buy some souvenirs, and then from there you can drive in to Rachel. When you get to Rachel, basically you can't miss it. It is like two or three trailers. One is like a little bar with a small little diner in a trailer. I mean, it's tiny, like just to give you some perspective. Now, across the street in 2014, there was like a graveyard of cars. It was like rusted out cars and like parts of buildings and stuff. Like it really looked dystopian. All of that has been cleaned up now, so it's all gone, which I found interesting. And next to Rachel's couple of trailers that make up the town of Rachel, Nevada, is a gas station. Before, it was like a gas station from like the 50s, 1950s maybe, that was falling apart and all rusted out. And now it's like a proper, like, well, the stations where you pump the gas are like proper gas pumps now. They're newer. They've definitely been updated. There's no gas station. There's just like a little kiosk with an attendant, but nobody's working there. So they have a gas station, but nobody's working there. And the same thing at the diner. They're looking for work. It's hard to find people to work out there because either you have to live in Las Vegas and make a 2-hour one-way commute back and forth, or you live in one of the trailers. So you get room and board when you work at this little diner, and it's really out in the middle of nowhere. It's really kind of just like, I don't know. I think it would be interesting to be out there for like a summer. And actually, one of the girls who was working behind the counter, I think she was like 25. She had arrived from Poland, and she just said basically the same thing. She was like, I thought it was really cool. I thought I'd stay here for a few months and work at the diner. And so there she was working at the diner. They are hiring right now. So if you want to be in the middle of nowhere, you can do that and work out in Rachel, Nevada. And yeah, so that has not changed. Back in the 2014, they used to give you a little map for free, like just something. When I say map, it's like, you know, just like a Xerox copy of how to get to the gates of Area 51. Now, they sell that map for 50 cents. Yeah? 50 cents, you can get that map. And before, they would give you this long, like the bartender would just give you this long sort of explanation of what to do, what not to do. They basically didn't do that. So when you go to the gates of Area 51, and this is an unofficial tourist site. These are literally the gates to Area 51, to the military base, okay? You go on this, you go off-road for, I think it's got to be like 20. It's a long, it feels longer than you would expect. And you can't go very fast because it's off-road. It's like a gravel dirt road. You go, you pull off the road, and then you just go toward the gates of Area 51, and you've got this little map. You don't really need it, but maybe it'll give you some, you know, assurance that you're on the right dirt road. And you just go. And you go and you go and you don't see anything. You're like in the middle of nowhere. I did see one car driving back towards us. It was like a normal car. If it's like a normal car, it's just another sci-fi, or, you know, it's just kind of like another tourist. In 2014, the gate was literally just like one little, you know, those things that you see at parking lots that that like arm that comes down that stops traffic. You know, it was pretty much that. And it's just that in the middle of nowhere. And in 2014, they warned us, they said, you can take pictures of it. Don't take pictures of any of the white vans. Those are the government vehicles. You might see those. And whatever you do, do not cross the gate. Every year, this is in 2014, they said some usually college age kids, college students do that, and then they end up getting detained up north. They take your vehicle down south, you get put on the no-fly list. It's a pretty big deal. So, you know, as you're driving on this dirt road, you're like kind of anxious, like, did I pass into Area 51? But, you know, the gate, you will see a gate, and it's bigger now. It's actually got like a couple of little like security guard kiosks. It has lights. And I don't know if this has anything to do with that. A couple of years ago, there was going to be like this quote raid on Area 51 where people were just going to storm the gate and try to find out if there are aliens inside, which is ridiculous because the base is way beyond the gate. And I think it's underground. So you're not going to, that's a bad idea. Also, they'd probably shoot you. So, you know, that's not good. But the gate is bigger now, and I don't know just why, but it's still like in the middle of nowhere. They told us this time to not take pictures of the gate. That was new. In 2014, they were like, you can take pictures of the gate, you know, just don't take pictures of the van or any personnel that you see, that kind of thing. So that has changed a little bit. The experience was still fun to go to the gates of Area 51. It felt a little bit more intimidating. It's a trip that I definitely think, if you're going to Las Vegas and you haven't done it, especially if you're going to the Star Trek convention, you should definitely go out to Area 51. Then on the way back from Rachel, there is the black mailbox. Now, when I visited the black mailbox in 2014, it was white. So let me give you a little bit of a story. The black mailbox, as it is known, is a mailbox that is along this road that goes between Las Vegas and Rachel. It is in the middle of nowhere. If you step out of your car, it is completely, completely silent. There's no trees, so you don't hear any of the rustling of leaves. There are no animals, really. It's so, so silent. It is basically one of the most peaceful places on the planet. It's just like you have to experience that kind of silence. It's really, really fascinating, actually. And it's just like a different feeling that you don't, even when you're at home and it's really quiet, or you've got noise canceling earbuds in, or whatever it is, it's very rare in your life that you will experience that level of silence. And you get to do that there near this black mailbox. And for years, people were leaving letters to aliens in this mailbox. They were writing letters to the government in this mailbox. They were shooting the mailbox, which is why in 2014, it had been painted white rather than black to discourage people. And it also was in this huge, thick metal canister, right? Like because people were taking shotguns to it and stuff, you know, doing dumb stuff. Thinking that it was like a mailbox to the Area 51 or to aliens. It turns out it's just a mailbox to some farmer whose farm is about 15 kilometers, about 8 miles away from the mailbox. The farm is not near the mailbox. And we looked it up. They grow things like potatoes and turnips and underground stuff, basically. And so that was the farmer's mailbox. It had all these locks on it because the post office was delivering mail here, but also people had been damaging the mailbox and trying to leave letters, and they put up boxes around it and camping there and stuff like that. This year, the mailbox is black again, and it's not the same mailbox. It's actually moved over. It has no locks on it. It is just like your typical thin metal mailbox, and people left all kinds of letters in there, some like really crazy stuff, like insane people stuff, some really like far right disturbing material, some really nice messages to aliens. It turns out this is no longer the guy's actual mailbox. He has moved the mailbox in closer to the farm. The post office now has to drive a long way to deliver the farmer the letters, but at least this way they don't have to worry about the mailbox or the mail disappearing or the mailbox getting destroyed. And so that's some place that I recommend that you stop. You will notice it. It is on the way back. Just keep an eye out. It's literally a black mailbox in the middle of nowhere. You just have to keep an eye out for it. Don't drive too fast.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Those roads, and you'll see it. Pull over and enjoy the silence and read some of those letters. It's really fascinating. I don't know what happens to those letters. There were maybe like 20 or 30 in there. I'm guessing somebody collects them every once in a while. Maybe the farmer goes out there and is like, hey, check out what these letters are. I don't know. So it's pretty interesting. And I have seen people camping there at night, overnight, to see UFOs. Because you are near Area 51, it is a place where people see a lot of unidentified flying objects. Probably not aliens, probably military spaceships, but you know. Military spaceships. Military ships. Okay. Take out the space. So that's one side trip you can do. If you're in the Las Vegas area, I recommend going out to Red Rock Canyon or the Valley of Fire. Those are a little closer. Those are about 45 minutes away from Las Vegas. National parks, a lot of natural beauty. Really, really fun. Valley of Fire is in a Star Trek movie. It's where Captain Kirk, spoiler alert, dies under a bridge. You can see that there. Again, if you're going around the summertime, some of those, especially Valley of Fire, some parts of it do close due to the heat. They don't want people to try to hike there and overheat. So, you know, just check the weather report. Maybe go very early in the morning, sunscreen, water, all that, you know, the basic precautions that you want to take. So I was kind of surprised 11 years later that little isolated corner around Las Vegas, Rachel and all that has kind of gotten a tiny bit more modern, but also it's still kind of the same. I don't know. If you're looking to disappear for a while, you want a job out in the middle of nowhere, the bar at Rachel, Nevada is hiring. Plus, just imagine like the night viewing. I mean, I just imagine like staying out there at night. I mean, it's probably pretty boring, but maybe you can invite some friends, stay with you for a while. I don't know. Might be kind of fun, but there you go. Some things to do around Las Vegas that I highly recommend. A couple of changes in the 11 years. And who knows, maybe I'll go back in 11 years from now and see if it's changed anymore. All right. Speaking of, if you are a YouTube member, you probably have seen this video of mine that I just released yesterday about Saudi Arabia. Now, there's a part that I cut out of that video because I didn't know if it would interest anybody, but that's what this podcast is for. I get to talk about some interesting things. I want to talk a little bit about how GPS works on a phone. And the reason I bring up this hotel is because this is a common problem in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. So when you're in the hotel, if you are, when I arrived at the hotel, let's say it was 5 p.m. I check in and then I go upstairs. I'm on like the 18th floor or something. And then when I get to the 18th floor, you know, I'm just, you know, checking my email, you know, getting settled in, that kind of stuff, doing my bed bug check, you know, and I'm going to go out for dinner or something. And I notice it's like 6 p.m. And I was like, huh, man, I don't think an hour passed, but maybe I'm that jet lagged or maybe I'm so tired I didn't notice. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's kind of weird. And then, you know, I went downstairs back to the check-in desk. And I noticed that my clock on my phone again had gone back an hour. Like, I didn't notice it at first, but I was like, there's something going on with the time. Like, something really odd is happening. It turns out that when you're upstairs, the GPS in the phone in Jeddah, and this happens in a lot of the high rise there, thinks that you're in Sudan. So I realized this issue when I was trying to order an Uber to get somewhere. And I was like, why does it think I'm in Sudan? And that's why it was showing me the clock being different. And apparently this is a common issue and they don't know why, but it's just something to be aware of. I took this part out of the video, but it's just like one of those weird kind of quirks that I noticed. And so I wanted to try to figure out how that might happen, but I got into this rabbit hole of how GPS actually works on your phone. And I thought that was pretty interesting. So when you think about the GPS on your phone, how do you think that works? I think most people think there are satellites in the sky. They triangulate. So you think there are three satellites that are beaming something to your phone and letting the satellites figure out where you are and then send you your location information. But actually, it's a little bit more interesting than that. You would think that like there's some beam or some laser happening, but what's actually happening is that it's using the clocks on your phone. It's using the clocks in the satellites. Now, this is how GPS works. It takes 4 GPS satellites for GPS technology to work. Again, this is a high-level explanation. There are more details. I'm not getting into all the details, but it takes 4. It takes 3 GPS satellites to triangulate your location, and it takes 1 of those satellites to calculate your altitude. And this is important for a couple of reasons. First is, when these GPS satellites what they're doing is they're sending a signal to your phone, and they are calculating the time to the billionth of a second that signal goes from the GPS to your phone and back. It's calculating this in billionths of a second. And by doing that with the 3 satellites and then the 4th one with altitude, it's able to then calculate where you are. In other words, if it takes, you know, 1.002 seconds and then the other one takes 0.21 seconds and the other one takes, you know, 0.19 seconds or whatever, it's going to figure out where you are based on that. And that works because there are approximately 30 GPS satellites orbiting the Earth at any given time. They all have atomic clocks on them. So the clocks on the GPS are super accurate. They're atomic clocks. Basically, they run not like, you know, not electronically like most of our clocks here on Earth do, or mechanically. They work on the oscillations of an atom, and that's how we get the time. It's super precise, up to like something like a billion years, okay? So the GPS satellites have a clock that's very, very accurate. And so when they send the signal to your phone and then that signal gets sent back to them, they're able to calculate based on the difference in time where you are. Also, it's important to add that all of this includes time dilation. So part of the calculation requires the dilation of time formula because, as you know, or maybe you don't know, the way we perceive time is that time is just ticking, right? Like 1 second is 1 second, but that's actually not the case. The closer you are to the faster you move through space, the slower you move through time. So if you were to get in a spaceship and go the speed of light in one direction and then come back to Earth, a lot of time would have passed on Earth, but for you, it might only be a few hours. So everyone you know might be dead kind of situation. Yeah, it's weird. And that's happening all the time. We just don't realize it, like when you go for a run, when you are in a car, when you are in an airplane. I've actually calculated this on foxnomad.com. When you're in an airplane, how much time dilation is affecting you. And I can look that up. But basically these satellites, because they're moving through space so fast, their clocks are going to be just slightly ahead of the clocks on Earth. So there's a formula that calculates that. And also, the closer you are to a gravitational source, and the bigger the gravitational source is, let me make sure I'm getting this right, the slower time goes. So the satellites are moving, but they're also further away from the gravitational force of Earth, so their clocks are going to run faster. And the converse, or the opposite is true for the phones, for your phone. It's closer to a gravitational source, so its clock is going to move a little bit slower, and you might actually be moving. You might be in a car. So all of that is calculated, and based on the time difference between those two signals, GPS can figure out where you are. Isn't that crazy? The next time you open up your phone and you open up maps to get directions somewhere, or you use GPS for anything, or maybe you've got a fitness watch and you turn the fitness watch on, you see it calculating, you know, your GPS signal, that's what's happening. There are some other ways that do help the GPS. A lot of phones use cell towers as well to help the GPS satellites get a lock on you quicker. So the cell towers know where you are already. So they can help send that data up to the GPS satellites ahead of time so that it can triangulate you a little bit quicker. In other words, the satellites don't have to figure out, you know, if it's cloudy or something. They don't have to figure out as, you know, it takes a little bit less processing power for them to figure out where you are. So a lot of things happening there. So let's go to time dilation. If you are flying for 8 hours, at the average, 10,668 meters for roughly 8 hours. That's about, I think that's like 35,000 feet, roughly, for 1,007 kilometers, which I think is like 500 something miles. It's pretty much the average when you're flying internationally, okay? When you're flying on a long haul flight, 8 hours. And you're flying from true north to true south, and your friend is sitting at sea level, okay? So we got all these calculations. But your watch, after an 8-hour flight, is running on average 0.00504 seconds faster than the person who is at sea level, who is stationary. So you are technically in the future by 0.00504 seconds after an 8-hour flight at those speeds. Kind of crazy. It is so little that obviously none of us notice it, but time is traveling, running a little bit faster and a little bit slower for all of us at all times. And when you're going for a walk, if you're walking right now and listening to this, time is going a little bit slower for you versus me, who is sitting here recording this podcast. Oh, and depending on where you are on Earth, maybe the altitude, that makes a difference because you're further or closer to the gravitational pull of the Earth. It's very interesting. I can leave a link to that in the show notes if you want to calculate how much in the future you are going to be after your next flight, or if you want to get really, really crazy, if you want to calculate all the flights you've ever taken and compare that to somebody who had not moved for that duration. Let's say you've been in the sky flying for, I don't know, weeks and weeks and weeks. You might be like a whole millionth of a second in the future. Pretty quiet, crazy, huh? Pretty wild. All right. Let's talk now about one other thing, talking about technology. This is Rogue Wi-Fi. It's something I posted about Wi-Fox, which is you can buy a device that's about the size of, I'm looking around. It is about the size. Take an iPhone, cut it in half, cut that in half, about that size. You can create a Wi-Fi network on that device called free Wi-Fi, and it will set up. I won't go into the details, but essentially once you've set that thing up, it will create a wireless network called, quote, free Wi-Fi, and it will redirect everybody to a Google authentication. So let's say you connect to this free Wi-Fi, you're at an airport, connect to it, and you want to go to, I don't know, your favorite news website, but it goes out, you have to log in with Google. You're like, huh. So you go to, I don't know, your favorite social media website. You got to log in with Google. You're like, that's so weird. What? You know, I'll just log in with my Google and just get done with it. Basically, what you've done now is given your username and your password to whoever set up this rogue network. These devices are very inexpensive. They're less than $100. They're super easy to set up. And I have caught a few of them at airports. It's why one of the reasons why I developed WiFox is to not only give you all the Wi-Fi passwords for networks around the world. We have now 1,400 passwords for airports around the world. But also, we have some super users, some premium users who go and find these rogue networks. And so the networks that you find in WiFox are all of the official ones. They might be a lounge. They might have a password with them. They might be a lounge password. They might be another kind of network that is not publicly accessible, or it might not be the main one, but it'll be like a network for a lounge or something for business users. We give you access to all of that so you get the fastest Wi-Fi. We also make sure that you don't get any of the rogue Wi-Fi. Now, an interesting thing for those of you who are WiFox users to try is to go into WiFox the next time you're at an airport, open it up, and look up the network names that come up there. Then go into the Wi-Fi settings on your phone, the wireless settings on your phone, and see all the networks that are there. You will notice a difference. And a lot of those ones, especially that say free Wi-Fi, are not to be trusted. Why would people do this? Well, to steal your credentials. That's why. Access to your email, access to your bank account. They can set up pretty much any kind of fake website they want. All very, very, very easy to do. It's a lot easier than people think. It basically $100 takes 5 minutes to set up. Then you turn this thing on at the airport, grab a couple of credentials, you hop on your flight, you get to where you're going, and then you exploit them. I mean, that's basically what happens. So be careful when you are using any free Wi-Fi at an airport. Make sure that you check it with WiFox. And if you see anything that says free Wi-Fi, right, and it's not the official account for the airport, be very, very, very wary, because somebody might be stealing your information. So another good reason to use WiFox, which also, this is the first episode of season 7. WiFox is going to be entering its 10th year of existence next year. I can't believe it. Wow, time goes by fast. All right, speaking of the last thing, travel, I've got my review of the Ridge Magnetic Power Bank up on YouTube right now. It is the latest Ridge product. I know a lot of you are fans of Ridge products. This is a really interesting charger. If you travel a lot, it's extremely versatile. Like, it's very versatile. It can even charge up a laptop. It's the size of about a deck of cards. I have a few likes and a few dislikes, but especially if you've got an iPhone with a lightning cable, I think it's an interesting charger, one you might want to pick up. It's going to really save you a lot. It's got MagSafe. It's got two connectors. It's got actually three. It's got two built-in cables, wireless charging. Can also give you a couple percent on a laptop. A lot of tech in a very small device. So that's up on YouTube. And we're at the end of the episode. So thank you all very, very much. I hope this all made sense. I hope all the technical stuff made sense. Hope you enjoyed some of those stories from Las Vegas. We're going to get back to our usual format. Well, next week we've got Geek Takeover Week, which I think you're going to love. If you're a sci-fi fan, you're definitely going to really enjoy the next episode. And then, do I have some great guests for you? I'm really, really excited. We're talking food, we're talking travel, we're talking culture, all that coming up in the next episodes of the Fox on the Map podcast. If you've gotten this far in the episode and you haven't already, please, wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google Podcast, wherever, if you could give the episode and the show a 5-star rating and a couple of kind words as a review, that really, really helps us get the word out about the show. Thank you all so much for your time. And until the next episode, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.